Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Campus XM. Little Neil Young. When I wrote Prof. Mule, Professor Mule, you can find it on profmule.com. Please take a look. It's only $2.99 for the month of April and May, so you can pick it up and get it cheap. When I wrote it, all I did was listen to Neil Young. And you might know me as, like, usually you'll hear me playing 80s new wave type stuff. And I've had an online station that would play 80s new wave. But I do listen to other artists. So I try to pick an artist that exemplifies the tone of the thing I'm working on. So for Prof. Mule, I felt Neil Young, especially his early albums, before he got electric, kind of exemplified my main character, the professor who's, you know, in despair, and he has to deliver a smart drug to the city and, you know, read the book to find out more, but I think you'll enjoy it. What I've noticed looking at online, I can see the people who buy it via Kindle. And I don't know exactly who, but I can see the reading patterns of people who buy it. And they usually start off slowly. And the book starts off slowly. And I'm sure I've lost some business because the book starts off slowly. But it's about an adjunct professor who's making ends meet. He's clipping coupons to buy pizza, that type of thing. You know, the napkins in his napkin holder at home, his plastic napkin holder, are McDonald's napkins. You know, he's living that life. And then it picks up. You know, he bumps into an old sweet mate and he decides to traffic a new smart drug for him because he needs the extra money. His wife is sinking. So I think you'll like this book. I can't see why not. And people start to read it slowly and then they just go nuts. So they'll read 20 pages, and it'll gnaw at them a little bit. And then they'll just read 100 pages and 100 more. Someone read 200 pages in one day. So, you know, it becomes addictive, just like the drug that is mentioned in the book. So profmule.com, and that's my little ad. So I listened to a lot of Neil Young. And then there's a character in this book, and she is not the wife. She is the person who's the drug runner in Manhattan. My cigar went out because I'm talking too much. And she's the drug runner in Manhattan, and the second book focuses more on her. If you've read the book, it's Rebecca DiCarlo, aka Yvette. So for that, I listened to a lot of Hole, Courtney Love, you know, Courtney Love's band. And I just wanted this angry siren of a woman, you know, that type of feeling. And not in that, you know, just a siren, because I wouldn't want to paint women as two-dimensional, like, oh, she's a siren. But that understanding that anger that some women have and that pent-up rage and how they channel it. And that's the mood I wanted to be in for this one. So I listened to, you wouldn't think she has a lot of stuff, but a lot of Courtney Love stuff. There's at least 30 songs you can pull out, 30 decent songs. And I would listen to those same songs over and over again. She even has some songs she did with her husband, Kurt Cobain. So there's a lot of songs there. So just to get into that. So, you know, I was thinking, like, you know, we tend to have very linear views of what art is. Let me just relight this cigar. Relighting. Okay, I'm back. All right, so we tend to have very linear views of what art is. Art to most people is something that is in an accepted medium, like a painting or a sculpture. could even be certain types of books, but not all books. Poetry, we consider an art. But is that just a cop-out? Like, is the art that you see at your local gallery in Podunk, is that really more worthwhile than something that we don't consider art, but that took a lot more work and a lot more outside-the-box thinking? The art you see in a medium-priced hotel, is that art? Or is it just a decoration for the walls? Hey, this artist paints in purple, and purple goes with the drapes that we have at Motel 6, you know, whatever. Is that art because it's in an accepted format? It's in a frame? Or can art be something else? You know, what is art? If it's a building, and, you know, we have some architects that we hold in high regard. You know, they make sloping roofs and grand facades and, you know, Gothic pillars. And, you know, they might have a lot of these influences that resulted in a design. And some buildings are like that, especially if they were made a long time ago. So we have that type of art, and most people will acknowledge, okay, certain architects do have a certain art to it, but in all, it's a group effort, and the architect needs to understand the rules of physics, and then builders have to get involved, and then prices might get involved. Hey, we can't afford this kind of marble, you know, maybe we can use this instead. So compromises are made along the way. And then the same goes for a movie. Very few people consider most movies art. They can transcend sometimes. You could see a Fellini movie or a Hitchcock movie, and there might be artistic moments in it and angles, and it might be a really good movie. But then the person says, well, it wasn't created by one person. It was created by, yes, you know, Orson Welles might have had a heavy influence on Citizen Kane, but he did have writers and actors had to do their share, and the guy holding the camera and all of that stuff. So there are, you know, other factors. So we as a society don't deem that as the same level of art as a guy who paints all by himself, and then that painting hangs in your local Podunk gallery. Even though he might have less training in his art than a Orson Welles might have in his art, or an architect might have in his art. The architect might have gone through 4 years of college and a really good college. He knows how to draw by hand. He knows how to do all the things that top architects know how to do, and might have even gone to graduate school, and then he worked in the field, built some smaller buildings. And then he worked his way up to some big building in a major city. That is a lot more effort than someone who, oh yeah, after their job working at Arby's, they go home and they paint a picture, and then they sell it to some wholesaler for $20, and he sells it to the Motel 6 chain, and then it's in, you know, Des Moines. That's, I think, the art of making a great, you know, making a movie, any movie, or a building, almost any building that's original, not from previous floor plans, is more of an art than that guy who just happens to claim to be an artist, and he works by himself in his garage. That's not, you know, so I think sometimes you have to realize what's art. So I think sometimes, you know, people hold poetry in high regard, but many song lyrics are better than poems, especially older song lyrics kind of have this poetry to them. And maybe it's because poetry was more active, let's say 40 years ago, and songwriters were influenced by poets. But, you know, advertising might be the poetry of our era. I saw an ad on Instagram of all places, and I hate internet ads. I think they're the worst, usually. But I was scrolling around Instagram, and I saw a picture of an old car. Abandoned car, rusting out, like a 60 ordinary car, nothing that great, but it was rusting out yellow in the woods, and it was a picture. So I stopped at it. I was like, okay, wait, this is, I didn't know it was an ad. And then the picture had some text under it, and I couldn't play the volume, but it said, you know, this is where you get, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is where you get when you travel 150,000 miles. And then the second line, you know, is a new screen in the middle of nowhere. So this car in the middle of nowhere in a wooded area, that's where it gets. And I'm like, all right, what kind of advertiser would have such an abstract thought that you would have this car and it's in the middle of nowhere, and but it had a life. It went for 150,000 miles, and it was a Nike ad. It was like, you know, now Nike might, a company like Nike and the way things work on the web is, you might do dozens of ads, and the one that actually resonates is the one that they'll just go with. You ride that horse till it doesn't ride anymore. So this could just be a test ad. Or maybe they have me pegged in some way. They know, oh, he's an older, arty guy. We'll give him an arty ad. But, you know, that ad is more abstract and artistic than most amateur poets I read. Most people who claim to be poets because they've, you know, they've gotten to 60 years old and they live in Sag Harbor or something and they want to have something to hang their hat on, so they call themselves a poet and they go to the local bookstore with their chapbook and the poems are awful. So this little, you know, ad was artistic. It was something. Maybe I'll seek it out later and you know, figure out what it is. Now, will that make me buy Nikes? You know, I buy whatever kind of fits me and I can get a good price on. And Nike, like every other brand of sneakers made by slave labor, practically, or child labor in some cases, in developing countries. So, sure, you know, some Madison Avenue kid who might have been a C-minus student with his feet up on the desk came up with this really good ad because he's an outside-the-box type person, but it doesn't really mask the reality of where that ad came from. Came from, you know, the sweat and tears of someone else. All right, my phone's going off, so I'm going to pause a little bit. But think about that. Think about other arts. Just a second. All right, I'm back. It's actually the next day, so I didn't get a chance to get back to the microphone. It's the next day. I was talking about art and, you know, what is art? What is art? You know, who knows? A good theory to use is the exploding planet, aliens find one thing theory. The theory goes like, if Earth were to somehow end in some kind of big mayhem, but somehow one thing, you know, some aliens just going around and they dig up this one thing, or they send a probe here or something, and they dig up one thing, a VHS tape, a book, you know, maybe a work of art or something. Like, how does that represent the culture? Would they be impressed with us, or would they be think that we were just a primitive people? If they got Ernest Goes to Camp on VHS and they somehow figured out a way to decipher it and they watched it, would they think we're a bunch of simpletons? If they got the Spice Girls as opposed to Neil Young, you know, would they think we were just like this very simple culture? And we have that own problem in our own world. Very few artifacts survived through the centuries. So, you know, someone finds a statue with a big penis and big, you know, and another one, or maybe the same one, with big breasts, and they assume that some culture worshipped fertility. You know, that was their thing. But it could have just been some funny tchotchke that was given out. Hey, you're visiting Pompeii? Here's a tchotchke. You know, just like you can get the Leaning Tower of Pisa or something. It's, you know, a little Statue of Liberty or something like that. It could have just been some mass-produced junk, but we think it's some kind of art and has some meaning to it. But that's just what survived. So today, for every legitimate piece of art, there might be 10,000 illegitimate pieces of art, But if those things exist and some ancient culture finds them, will they be art or will they not be art? So that's kind of my barometer. I kind of picture someone finding something many years from now, and will they say, hey, this is pretty good? Or will they say, oh, this is just like everything else of its era? Sometimes something can be of its era, written in a style of its era, but we don't remember any of the other books of that era, so it now is special to us. So a writer could be, you know, a lot of people imitated Ernest Hemingway, for example, and none of that stuff survives. So we still have Ernest Hemingway. He didn't really copy anyone. He was original quasi-journalist who turned that style into fiction. But yeah, sometimes a writer could be typical of his era, and we just don't know it, because there could have been 10 Shakespeares, but the one Shakespeare, his work somehow survived. And the other ones, you know, the other Shakespeares, the guy, you know, let's say Star Trek survives and Star Wars doesn't. And we think Star Trek, you know, 200 years from now is the best thing ever, but we don't have Star Wars to compare it to. That type of thinking. In any case, yesterday I was at the library. Today I just came back from Planet Fitness, so maybe I could intertwine the two in some way. They say that is art. If you can get two different ideas and turn it into one thing. I don't think I have that in me, because I didn't sketch out anything. I don't think I have that in me right now. But when I'm, you know, when I'm really feeling it, I can kind of combine two abstract thoughts into one coherent idea. Today I'm not going to be coherent. But I was at the library, and because I wait for my daughter, she goes to college in Albany, and I figured out a whole routine to work while she's, if she has a long day or something, and if I don't want to leave the city of Albany. So I know there's a library near here, and it's a really neat and clean library, and it should be open more than it is. It's only open about 8 hours a day. They just must not have funding or something, but it's really neat and clean. But they get all kinds of characters in it, because the neighborhood's kind of mixed. There's a lot of college kids. It's a safe neighborhood, but there's, you know, it's not far away from unsafe neighborhoods. And so they get an interesting mix in the library. So sitting next to me was a guy who reeked of pot, and he was just like staring at his phone and just kind of, you know, sleeping, you know, in a way, kind of like dozing off or something. And then there was another old guy, and he had an old style flip phone, a big flip phone, and he was staring at it like it was, you know, like it was some puzzle. And then he started pressing all the buttons on it. Like, he wasn't making a phone call, because that would have been 10 buttons. He was pressing like 50 buttons, and they were super loud. And this library, just any noise just echoes. And he just kept pressing them. And, you know, I looked at another patron of the library, and we just shook our heads. And the guy was totally oblivious. And I'd love to be to that point of oblivion where I just don't realize I'm being a goof, you know, where you just like at that point. And he's pressing buttons. He probably wasn't getting anywhere. I don't know why he was pressing buttons. Was he playing Snake on the cell phone? I don't know. But it was like a huge flip cell phone. It was the size of a Star Trek communicator. It was like that size. And, you know, where did this guy come from? So that guy was there in the library, not reading, of course. Very few people were reading. And then another guy was next to me for a while, and he got up and left, and he wasn't reading either. And then another guy, he looked more erudite, kind of professorial, and he had glasses, and I was like, okay, maybe this guy's doing some legitimate research. He was in the cubicle two down. And then when I stood up, I noticed he had comic book panels. So he was reading comic books, and he was looking at the panels, and they were like pull-out panels. And I don't think he was the creator of said comic book, because that I could respect. If you're making the comic book, I can respect that. But I don't think so. I think he was more so just, that was his level of reading, was reading a comic book. So looks can be deceiving. You know, he was like, he seemed to be enjoying it. Like, it was like some kind of, you know, it was like this type of comic book was a little bit more expensive, I guess. They call them graphic novels, maybe, but I don't think it was a graphic novel. And you could pull out little sections. So there was that guy. So he wasn't really reading either. And then there were some people just using, you know, their computers or using a computer because they don't have a computer at home. And not really reading, you know, they were just on the computer. And then there was a couple, and they were young, and I think they had a little kid, or maybe not. There was some kid hovering around them, but I don't know if it was their kid or not. And they were younger, and they kind of reminded me of, like, me when I was younger, and, you know, and my wife, because I met my wife young. And, you know, we both came from lower middle class or lower class backgrounds and weren't really refined, but we were trying to fit more into a refined world. I was going to college and trying to, you know, better ourselves. And, but, you know, we still had a lot of those habits from our youth, and we definitely didn't have money. And not that we're rolling in it now, but we have more than we had. And these two were looking at videos to take home, TV series videos. So they were looking at, like, Lost and Fargo and different series, TV series that are on video, and they were going to get a bunch so they can watch it. So they probably didn't have internet or a streaming service, and they didn't have cable, because cable, you could also stream stuff, or they just didn't want to pay for, you know, the $4 or $5 to watch Green Lantern or some crazy stupid superhero movie. They wanted something. So they get these binge watch movies and TV shows for free at the library. And I used to do that back in the day. I think, you know, part of it, a lot of people say Blockbuster went out of business because of the internet. I think it also went out of business because libraries started carrying all this stuff and people would just go to the library. I used to go to the library with my wife. You know, she wasn't my wife then, or daughter when she was born, and we'd pick out movies, and they were free. So they kind of reminded me, you know, and they kind of dressed a little like they were, they weren't rich people by any stretch, but they were together, and they were a team, and they were picking out movies, and they seemed happy with each other, and they seemed street smart. You know, they didn't seem like they were dummies by any stretch, but, you know, they were loud. You know, they were loudly picking out which movies they wanted. I don't think people realize how their voice carries in libraries. So there were those people. And then on the way out, you know, I noticed that school was letting out. The local school was letting out. And there were a couple of boys, about 10. And, you know, you see this. It's unfortunate, I guess, but some 10-year-olds are different than other 10-year-olds. And these kids were more advanced because they're probably brought up in a home where they see a lot of crap. And when you see a lot of crap, it ages you. I was rather innocent at that age and definitely a little older. I was very suspicious of adults and adult situations. And you have to be, because I was pretty much a latchkey kid. I had paper roots. I went to a Catholic school, and a couple of the priests seemed a little bit weird, and one of them was later convicted of something. So I was definitely on guard. You'd hear stories, hey, that's Mr. Brown Pants. He'll feel your, you know, your nuts if you go close to him. You'd hear stories like that. So I was very wary, and I was on my own, so I was very wary as a kid. So I probably dated at a more normal pattern. Like, you'd do, like, the innocent stuff, like going to roller skating rinks or something like that. And that was about it. Super shy, you know, that type of thing. And then not really go on serious dates till you're junior in high school, you know, give or take. Maybe go on some warm-up dates as a sophomore, you know, like a normal human being in society. But I went to a rough-and-tumble high school because I was sick of Catholic school. It was horrible. I was just sick of all the rules and the brainwashing. You know, they'd bring in people and they'd have them give you the talk about abortion and about how they throw live babies into a garbage can and they're still squirming. You know, these total lies about all these things, you know, and trying to brainwash you. And I got sick of that. I didn't mind. As a kid, it wasn't as heavy-handed, but once I got into ninth grade, the Catholic school thing just was tiresome. And because these were kids paying to go to school, their parents were paying anyway, they were smug kids for the most part. So there was that smugness, too, that I didn't like. So I went to the local school, which was very, and it was definitely mind-changing and in a good way. It was definitely an urban school, by all intents and purposes. And I like to do the things that, you know, a lot of guys like to do. I played football and wrestled and did judo at the Y and whatever, you know, later played lacrosse and things like that. I like to do guy stuff. And so a school like that was more up my alley, and I still got to do all those sports and all that stuff. But I would see, like, when I first showed up, I was 15 years old, I guess 14. No, I was 14. And I went to my first football practice before school even started, because football starts in the summer and school starts September or whatever, 3rd or 4th. And so I got to feel out the school before I even got to attend it. And the first practice, they went over a roll call of all the potential athletes. And they would say, you know, is so-and-so here? No, he's in jail. Is so-and-so here? No, he's in jail. And then you'd hear stories about, you know, some of the players at 14 had had plenty of sex by that point. So they would tell stories about, you know, their sex. They were very immature about it. You know, you're too young to have sex at that age. So they were very immature about it. And some were having sex. And then there were some girls that were known to have sex with these kids at a young age. And they were very impressionable. And, you know, maybe they didn't have much parenting going on at home either. But some of them seemed like maybe in a different world they would be just innocent, normal girls. But they had, you know, they were easily influenced. Their self-esteem was in the garbage. So, you know, of course, if the 13, 14-year-old boys are going to be having sex, they have to find someone to have sex with. So, and they see stuff going around the house, and it's a hypersexual household and that type of thing. So, as I'm leaving the library, I see these two kids that were about 10 or 11, and a couple of cute little girls walking along the sidewalk, and they were wearing little raincoats, and they were obviously well taken care of. Maybe they were sisters or cousins or something. Well taken care of little girls. They had little, you know, brand name knapsacks and stuff like that. And the one of the kids yelled, "Hey, you know, so-and-so wants to make out with you." And they're laughing. And the girl's like, "What?" And it's like, "He wants to, you know, do X, Y, and Z with you." And I'm thinking in my mind, you know, please, you know, please, girls, keep walking. But the one girl, like, takes it as an insult, runs up to him and punches him. And then he squares up like he wants to punch her. And I give him a dirty look and he put his hands away. But, you know, she went back and then they start giving each other the finger and stuff. And that's just, like, the beginning of problems. Like, just don't go back, because eventually you'll get worn down by, you know, by people who are more jaded in life. The people that are more jaded in life. And, you know, by the time she might be 12 or 13 or 14, she might be hanging out with that kid and who knows, having sex. And then, you know, on the way home, I saw a girl who could have been 16 pushing a baby carriage. And so is that the life you want? Your whole life is kind of ruined at that point because you miss all these years of development that you could have had in high school and then maybe college or just working a job, a normal job, not a job that kind of just barely pays the bills, but a job that has some growth and learning experience to it. So you miss out on all of that. So that's what I saw at the library. Now, how do I tie that into Planet Fitness? I don't know. Planet Fitness was just kind of empty today, and there weren't a lot of people in it. Today was unusual. There were more people my age in it. Usually it's mostly college kids. I chalk it up to maybe because they went early, or maybe because final exams are coming and these students are studying, or maybe maybe they were up late last night, and I don't know. So that was Planet Fitness. Nothing unusual going on there. No one reading books there either. So that's my story. So I'm going to end this. I'll attach this to the previous part before I was interrupted by a phone call. And that will be that. I guess I'll title it, "What is Art?" and "Going to the Library." So this is it. I'm not going to put an installment of After the Fire on this. I think I'll just end it early. All right. Adios. Until next time. See ya.